And in the studio with me now with our trails report for this soggy weekend, Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I guess we need to make the reminder that stay off the trails if it's raining.
You know, I know how much you hate to have me say that, but it looks like we're going to get a dose of moisture, which, of course, we need desperately. And it will change our riding conditions out there, riding, running, hiking, you know, in total. So, you know, once again, just be respectful, be smart about it. It's it just creates more work than we need. We have plenty of work. We're going to be doing a lot of exciting projects this year. So let us get to those projects and not be having to worry about maintenance. So a couple things going on out there, right? We have a bike to school day going on. Bike to school, work and play is kind of how we're terming it. If you're anywhere near the school area, or come on down to the school area, we have bagels and cream cheese from Wasatch and coffee from Wasatch Bagels. We got snacks for the kids, helmet giveaway for kids who don't have helmets, and certainly just a nice social hour. And I just came from there. The temperature's pretty nice out. I mean, it's definitely rideable weather, and certainly just show up and down there and have a cup of coffee with us and hang out. So it's a nice morning. We do have, a couple events coming up. We do have the Cold Swap coming up Saturday. Starts at 9 o'clock. Doors open at 9. You can drop off gear yesterday and today. So if you're thinking about getting rid of something cycling-related, take it over there. And then, once again, we'd like to keep priming the pump for Mountain Madness, which is Everything's Trails, kind of a gathering that we do down at the Doubletree, thanks to the Epic Promise folks. They sponsor that with us. That's a great opportunity to find out what's going on, not only in Park City, but also in the surrounding areas, whether it's Corner Canyon, Wasatch County, South Summit. So please join us for that as well. That's at 5:30 on Friday. 5:30 on Wednesday afternoon, and it goes to 8:30, and you can come and go as you see fit. Just kind of a social, little bit of libation, some snacks. So it should be good fun. Also, we are giving away a Epic Promise Pass and a raffle for that one, and we'll have a couple of silent auction items just to keep everyone interested. So, Leslie, that's kind of it, but we're going to talk dogs a little. Did you want to talk dogs?
Yeah, because you had mentioned, we talked a little bit last week about whether any analysis has been done in terms of some of those off dog leash areas and how that's worked out.
Yeah, and I was actually able to, Clay from over in Summit County had sent some information over to Heinrich and Logan over here in the city. And, you know, let's remember that numbers are numbers, and then how things are reported is always interesting. But over the course of 2016-2017 season, there actually were only – and it's hard to believe. Even I have a hard time believing this. But the number was 2 dog incidents in Round Valley. So you got to go, well, that's pretty minimal, especially if you look at the number of user days. I mean, we take that as a percentage of user days, which over the course of 2 years could easily exceed a million user days out there. That's a pretty small number. But what I've been seeing, I think you've been seeing it in like the park record and stuff, there's been any number of incidences where people are talking about, well, I was in an off-leash area. You know, my dog was legitimately in a lost off-leash area. No matter where you are, okay, and I'm not going to quote the law because I can't, but no matter where you are with your dog, you are ultimately responsible for your dog's behavior. So if it's chasing wildlife, chasing cyclists, runners, bites somebody, being in an off-leash area is not an excuse. It's not an exemption from having to be responsible for your dog. That's just the way it is. So at the end of the day, a lot like we are responsible for our kids, right? The buck stops at your door. So if you're a dog owner and your dog is not well-behaved, cannot be counted on to be called back and so forth, you shouldn't really let them off the leash at all. That's just the way it is. Or you should let them off the leash in areas where there aren't a lot of people and there's no possibility of something going wrong. So anyhow, that's the deal. You are always on the hook for your dog's behavior, period, leash area or not.
Yeah. And just in terms of what this winter season was like out at Round Valley, did you have not necessarily incidents of, you know, dog bites, but just, you know, people working together, skiers and hikers and dog walkers?
You know, I was a little basically slowed down this winter, so I don't have a great feel. But one thing that I always can tell you is that if my inbox isn't exploding with stuff, then I usually feel pretty good that we're getting it together. And I can tell you that over the last 8 years of doing the mountain trails, being a director, that those emails have slowed down significantly on all levels. And I think people have really engaged pretty well locally and even with visitors, that we're at a much better behavior. I think everyone appreciates the fact that we're all out there for the same reason, have fun, relax, you know, get some exercise. So I think things are way better than they used to be. And yet it's a constant project that we have to keep working on, because things change out there, and we just need to sometimes say it a different way. But I'll go back to 10 seconds of kindness. All you got to do is slow down, smile, and be nice. It's just not that hard. So and don't let an incident ruin your day. You know, just get out there and move on. You're out there to have fun.
We're going
to
spend certainly some of the next coming hour here talking about Bonanza Flat. But real quick, you're working with the city to help develop hiking / biking trails there. There's four that they're talking about.
On Bonanza Flat, mm-hmm. Make sure we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
I think the thing I can be definitive about would be that, and especially for mountain trails, the first trail that is slated to go in would be the Bloods Lake new trail. So the trail that exists up high on Guardsman's Pass is basically just it's a bad trail. It's a social trail. It was never really intended to be there the way it is. So we will build a sustainable trail from a lower down, just about a quarter mile above the intersection. There's a quarry that will become a parking lot. And from there, the trail for Bloods Lake will go up to the lake. And it'll make it about a two-mile hike. That lake, that trail is looking at currently will be a no-bike trail. These things can change. This is not written in stone. And we believe that, you know, the parking area will be substantial so that people won't have to park along the road and create some of the what the fire department really hates is, you know, the access in and out at the top of the Guardsmen's can be horrific at times. And that's one of the big battles, is to change that kind of traffic thing up high. So there'll be a new focus down a little bit down lower. And there are some additional plans for trails queued up in maybe phase two, but those are probably things like trying to connect over to Scott's Pass from Empire Pass. There will be one or two trails potentially on Bonanza Flat, but we have to be super sensitive about the wetland areas and wildlife habitat, because those are the first priorities for Bonanza Flat, is basically water quality, wildlife, and wild terrain. So we're not trying to encourage altering things in a big way. And also there's a real interest in Bonanza Flat to not necessarily put the place on hyper use. It already gets a lot of use. So really try to manage the use and see how things go.
Okay, we'll talk about that in future weeks. Charlie, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. It's 8:16. Joining me now in the studio, I have the president of the Brighton Estates Property Owners Association, Mark Fisher, also attending last night's meeting. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So before we get started, Mark, let's just make it clear that you only speak for some Brighton Estates residents, even though you are the president of one of, I think, two homeowner associations.
Yes, the Brighton Estates Property Owners Association has been in existence since 1970, which is the organization I represent, which is 82% of the lot owners. A couple of years ago, a smaller group of folks broke off and formed Pine Canyon. So, yes, there are two groups.
Okay. But even within the Property Owners Association, there are still lots of differing opinions, yeah?
I think that's been exaggerated by the local governments, because they want us to argue so that we can't get anything done, and we're kind of calling them out on that. We all get along just fine, and it's no different than Park Meadows or Thames Canyon. It's, you know, people are allowed to have their own opinions.
Yeah. Is it true that you're the largest private property owner within the Bonanza Estates?
I'm not the largest, but I would be one of the top three, probably.
Okay. So you certainly have some vested interest in seeing the access issues resolved.
Yes, in 1998 is when I started purchasing land up there. Ironically, it was the same year that Deer Valley started their expansion over into what has become Empire Canyon and the Empire Day Lodge, the Montage, and all that. And so we have been up there. Brighton Estates was formed between 1962 and 1967 in five plats. There's 430 lots, 220 owners, so most people own multiple lots, right? And there's enough water to have about 200 structures. So Brighton Estates will never get large. It's a snowmobile community. There's no question about our access. We have access on the state highway and on the Guardsman Road. That cannot be taken away from us. It's owned by the public. What we're talking about in addition to that is historical corridors that we've used for the last 50 years to get to the various areas, because it's a large area up there.
Those historical corridors off of the platted roads?
That is correct. And those are mainly used in the summer, in the wintertime for snowmobiling.
Right. So how is historical corridor defined legally?
Well, look, I want to start by saying I totally respect Wasatch County Council, our Park City Council and Mayor. We appreciate all the hard work they're doing. So any comments I make today are meant to be helpful. I've lived in this town for 20 years, and the last thing I'm trying to do is pick a fight over Brighton Estates. But I feel it's important that everybody be treated equally, and I've kind of taken on this cause because it's almost elitism versus poorer people, and it really bothers me. It even bothers me that we're even talking about not having access. We were there first. It doesn't make any sense to me why this is even on the table. It should just be put in the document, and we should be celebrated.
And I guess the reason I'm trying to provide some of this background and talk about those historical corridors is because I think what I'm hearing from city officials is that this Bonanza Flat is about property conservation. It's not about making access easier for people living in another county. There are platted roads. And I guess that my question would be, isn't your beef with Wasatch County and not Park City? Because
I don't have a beef with Park City or Wasatch County. We're just simply trying to get them to include in the document, just like they did the Girl Scout camp and the Talisker lease, Brighton Estates. Brighton Estates' name is not mentioned in the staff report last night. We find that remarkable. I mean, we were there first. We were there before Deer Valley, before the Montage, before the hundreds of multi-million-dollar condos in between. And we simply don't want to see our rights degraded. So, again, we're a team player. We're happy that our new neighbor is Park City Municipal. We supported it. You may know many of our members worked tirelessly to raise money, like Bridget Meinholt, and like dozens of other people. And it just is a slap in the face after all the hard work we did to raise this money to help purchase that land to be ignored. And so we just want to seat at the table, and we want to be respected. I think that's, if I had to boil it down to one word, we want to be respected. And it feels like we're not. It feels like people think we're some sort of leper colony up there. And I don't get that, because there's a lot of high-quality people that live up there. And that's why I'm here today, to support them.
So what is it that you went to the council, and I don't know that you got any answers from them, and they're still not going to give you a seat at the table.
It's to be determined. I'm hopeful. These are all my friends. I've known all these people for 10 to 15 years and done a lot of business with them in Park City. And so I think that there's still plenty of time to work this out, and I'm here today to request that. It's important to note that the two previous owners of the land allowed us unfettered access to Brighton Estates. So going back to the Hank Rothwell United Park days, going through the Talisker phase, there was never any enforcement. So the idea of trying to enforce it differently today is odd to us, because we're very respectful of the land. The type of people that live up there are the type of people that respect wilderness and love wilderness and protect wilderness. So we could be their biggest advocates if we were allowed to be, in terms of protecting that land.
So why can't it work, though, with what you already have? That's what I guess it's, there are platted roads. It's a platted subdivision. Why can't you just use what was made in the beginning, everybody was there.
We can, and that's what we want codified in the agreement. But right now they're staying silent on it. We just want them to say that our rights will not be changed.
Well, you do have rights basically on the platted roads. What you don't have rights to is to snowmobile through the middle of privately owned property.
We don't want to. We, like I said, we're 90% aligned with the city on this. We don't want people from Salt Lake coming up on the weekend and zooming around. And unfortunately, I think what happens is that activity gets confused with being people that live in Brighton Estates. Typically, from our research, it's folks coming up Big Cottonwood Canyon, parking up at the top and snowmobiling down into what is now Bonanza Flat. And we need to separate those two. But there's two corridors that are used and have been used for 50 years. One's called the Jeep Hill, and it comes directly over the top of Empire Pass right down into Brighton Estates. It's a critical corridor that must be preserved, particularly during storms, because during storms the existing platted road banks over and is very dangerous. So that must be preserved. The only other main corridor is a corridor that goes by the old Talisker Yurt into Platts 1 and 2. That's a road that's been there, and it's been a dirt road since the beginning of Brighton Estates. Those are two critical access points, and we've just asked that those be preserved. And I actually talked to Chief Wade Carpenter about this, and I'm asking the council, the folks listening today, to get him involved because he came from Brian Head, and there was 600 miles of snowmobile trails, Chief told me. He goes, the only way we could police them was having properly identified corridors. And so we have a much smaller challenge here, right? We're only talking about a couple corridors where he was talking probably about dozens, hundreds of miles long. So I think it's important to get people like that involved so that we don't run into any problems down the road. I sent a note over to the city the other day. I said, let's get it right the first time, you know, the old saying. And that, so that's why I think we just need to sit down. But again, this is not a combative situation at all. I'm not here to pick a fight with anybody. We just would like to clarify our rights in writing.
Okay, but again, I mean, you're saying that their rights to use Jeep Hill and this old dirt road where the yurt used to be, it's not a right.
Well, they're shown on the aerial maps going back to 1960. So I guess what are you suggesting we would need to try to go for a prescriptive easement?
Right.
I mean, maybe we will.
Yeah.
If we're forced to, but bear in mind, the last two owners did not enforce that. They allowed these corridors to be used.
And I guess who makes that decision? You know, because these corridors that you're talking about are within the city's property now, right?
The city's the new kid on the block. Okay, we welcome our new neighbor. But the last thing we expect is our new neighbor to bully us. Okay, that would be unfortunate, especially a community that puts forth social equity as one of their top three priorities. And what I mentioned last night in the committee, does social equity end at your border? Because if it does, that's hypocritical. Social equity is a concept based on all humanity. So in our little world of Brighton Estates, we should be celebrated and treated fairly and equally and with respect. And I think that's going to end up happening. I really do. I'm optimistic.
Also, I guess you expressed some concern with regard to the trails and such that are being planned for the area. You're saying that that's going to create even more problems.
Well, the one thing that we're all puzzled by is we raised money to buy Bonanza Flat for conservation purposes. Now they're talking about, which I don't object to, but it has to be really thought out because it's such a beautiful area that if we build world-class mountain bike trails up there, the place is going to be overrun. You're going to need a 500-car parking lot. And so it just seems odd to me that we would do things to the property to attract people to come to it, especially from the valley. And that's what I'm concerned about because you got to remember, I've been going up there now 20 years, and I've seen all these different cycles. And I know I heard Charlie say that we don't want hyper use, I think was his term. Well, guess what? You're going to get hyper use because it is so beautiful, and everyone is going to want to use it, and it's free. So this has to be slowed down is what I asked last night and just really thought through. For example, moving all the cars off of Guardsman's Pass which they showed an aerial photography with 100 cars up there. It is a disaster, and it is dangerous. But the unintended consequence is perhaps to move this car, this big parking lot, right down literally in the backyards of a dozen Brighton Estates platted lots. And so we've just said, hey, please put the parking lot where we don't have to look at it. Remember, be respectful of your neighbor. And so let's all work together, sit down at the table, and figure out where those locations should be. We want to cooperate. We're here to send a message of cooperation. But yeah, so far they won't talk to us, which is odd. I mean, I've known all these people for north of 10, 12 years. I don't understand. I voted for them.
So the parking lot that many of the Brighton Estate residents use now during the winter, does that still exist under the management plan?
Well, they won't tell us. That's what we want to know. Where are we going to park in the wintertime? We've offered to move down Pine Canyon Road to the state park parking lot right below the entrance to Plat 1 and 2. There's a large parking lot in Wasatch Cate State Park there that would take our entire snowmobile operation down into Brighton Estates, and then it would allow the city to develop the Y intersection any way they want for their uses in the wintertime. And that's the kind of productive discussion that we want to be part of.
So are you having the same discussion, though, with Wasatch County? I guess that's because, again, Brighton Estates is within Wasatch County. It seems to me they're the ones that should be making any improvements.
Well, again, we all need to sit down at the table. But the Wasatch County, as you heard from Rick Johnson's comments last night, and Rick is kind of our point person with Wasatch County, they have said, yes, we want to sit down. We want to work this out. We want to talk with you all. So a couple things can happen. We can just continue using the Y intersection as we have for years. You know, most people don't know we have plowed the state highway 224 for 11 seasons now successfully without an incident. And the main reason we plow up and over and down to the Y intersection is parking, because there's no place to park down by the Empire Pass Lodge, right? And so it's really the plowing is needed to get to a parking lot. So once we establish where the parking is, that'll help a lot.
Yeah, but shouldn't the plowing be done from Pine Canyon Road? I mean, shouldn't that be your access?
It is. We come down Guardsman Road and take a left on Pine Canyon.
I'm saying from Wasatch County.
Absolutely not. That is absurd. Should we not allow people to come in from Kimball Junction and make them come around and come in on Quinns Junction? That's what you're suggesting. It's against the law. We will never agree to come up from the Heber side. That's ridiculous. It's 7 miles and 2,000 vertical drop, and it's super steep. I'm sure you've been up there. But no, that's a ludicrous thing to even talk about, to think that we would be forced to come up through the Midway Heber side. That won't happen.
Okay, Mark, I'm out of time. I got to leave it there. Anything?
I just want to say, you know, for those listening, our message is one of cooperation. Our message is, please, let's sit down and work this out and encourage your public officials to do that with us. Thank you.
It's Mark Fisher, president of the Brighton Estates Property Owners Association. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:35 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW. A marathon meeting for the Park City Council last night. In the studio to recap some of the items discussed, I have Mayor Andy Bierman. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
First, how's your vegan challenge going?
Oh, it's going well. I'm having fun with it. Day five at this point, and it's been fairly straightforward. I'm feeling good. It's found plenty of interesting foods to substitute the ones I've changed, and I'm happy I'm doing it. Continue to learn, too, in terms of the benefits to the planet, benefits to health, and I'm a bit of a believer. I'm not sure I'm ready to convert to a full vegan full time. That's a big step, but I think it's going to change a lot of my eating habits.
Great. Let's just kind of continue the Bonanza Flat discussion. Again, it got a lot of attention from Brighton Estates residents during public comment.
I feel like I just finished that one at 10 o'clock last night.
Yeah. Well, so let's address then some of Mark's concerns. I mean, he basically says they have historical rights. The city, I think, has basically drawn a line in the sand and saying this property is about conservation. It's not about access for Brighton Estates residents. Where, I mean, am I putting words in your mouth?
Yeah, let me put it in context. What happened last night is we need to get a conservation easement and management plan in place for that property so we can take care of trails, bathrooms, parking, address what we promised we would do to the people of Park City when they purchased that property and our partners, that we would make sure and protect the land. There's a lot of craziness going up there. It's unmanaged. And we've been struggling to get that conservation easement done because of all these side access issues. And these access issues are not new. They've existed for 30 years. And Brighton Estates, unfortunately, is not a consolidated group. There are several different factions up there that all have different opinions and different desires, and they're suing each other. They're suing Wasatch County, and now they're threatening legal action against us, potentially. And so it's very difficult. We're not getting one message from them or one desire from them. So the long and the short is we decided we're going to pull out the access issue because that's much more complicated and discuss that separately. And that needs to be a discussion that not only involves Brighton Estates, but Wasatch County and UDOT. They are actually the larger players in this discussion. So last night, our focus was on the conservation easement and the management for Brighton Estates. And I know that made the residents of Brighton Estates upset because they would like this solved. I can't blame them. They've been struggling with this for 30 years. But that wasn't our job last night. And frankly, when they bought up there as seasonal cabin owners, they took on some challenges. And I don't think we had residents coming up last night saying Park City has to solve this. This is not something Park City is going to solve for them. They're going to have to solve it internally. We're going to try to be a good neighbor and work with them. But any conclusion we come to is not going to satisfy anyone, at least today.
Yeah. But if you don't deal with that before this conservation easement is approved, then you've left them out, haven't you?
We haven't left them out. I mean, they have the access. They have roads that go right to their property. Those are seasonal roads, and in the summer they can drive to their property, and in the winter they can take snowmobiles. There's also the ability within our conservation easement, if we determine there are life safety issues or reasons that we need to give them additional access, we can do that through our management plan.
Okay, so that can be worked out at a later date. This
yeah,
is not,
absolutely.
Once you approve this, it's not... Because as it's written, it prohibits all motorized vehicles.
And we have told them that, and they continue to want to press this point. They would like this resolved today. And again, there are many parties that need to be involved. And so Park City alone is not going to solve this for them.
So the message to those folks is be patient.
Be patient. We're going to try to be a good neighbor, but also set realistic expectations. When we're not coming in with a magic wand to be able to fix 30 years of challenges over there. And our plan is to tighten things up. We are going to have to regulate parking. We are going to have to regulate access. And when I say collectively, because Wasatch County and UDOT are going to be part of that. That's part of dealing with all the new uses that are going on up there, that I should say the growing uses over the years, not just related to Brighton Estates. But we will work with them, and I think ultimately it's going to be better. But some of these revolve around people want shortcuts to their homes, and I'm not sure we're going to be able to accommodate those across some of our sensitive areas that we're trying to restore.
Yeah. By dispersing the parking that we've got there basically at the Salt Lake Summit County line there.
That mess up on the guard road?
Yeah. And I guess it's just like, I mean, why make improvements at all? I mean, if it's about conserving it, I mean, don't you make it as rugged as possible? I mean, when you start making things nice, people come.
Well, thanks for asking that question, because the challenge is right now people are parking everywhere. It's unregulated. So what we're trying to do is actually manage the capacity by creating parking and then policing that parking. So ultimately there will probably be less parking up there, but it will be consolidated. It will have bathrooms with it, and it'll be at major trailheads. And likewise, a lot of the trails have developed over there. They've spidered out over 30 years. They go everywhere, and we're going to close a lot of those trails and put proper trails in with easier access, less erosion issues, and we're going to manage dogs as well. There are areas that dogs will be allowed, and then when you get into the sensitive watershed areas or the sensitive wildlife areas, dogs won't be allowed. So it is our belief that it can't handle its current capacity or growth, so we are going to try to manage that or limit that to a degree that is probably less than what it is today.
So you do have buy-off with the from your partners with regard to what you've got written now in terms of?
In general, people are very excited about what we're trying to do. Everybody knows something needs to be done, and we've seen that around here. I mean, back 30 years ago, sort of anything went in Park City, up in Daly Canyon and Round Valley and that in terms of people or dogs and uses. And as more people moved here and we saw more uses, we had to restrict those to protect the land and protect the people using it. And that's what's going on up there. Our desire largely is to keep it wild, but people will go up there, so we want to make sure we control that access and certainly do a better job of the waste management for people and dogs.
Yeah. And then with regard to enforcement that you mentioned, so we'll be ticketing people who aren't in one of those parking lots.
That's one of those things we're working out right now with Wasatch County and UDOT. Those road corridors are theirs. We're also working with Wasatch County Sheriff, our chief here, Wade Carpenter, and Unified, trying to figure out how we're going to deal not just with policing up there, but also any emergency issues.
Okay. And in terms of when this is going to happen, do we have a timeline for it?
Yeah, we want to do some of these projects this summer in terms of consolidating the parking, putting the bathrooms and trails. So we'd like to pass the conservation easement within the next month. I think council was very supportive yesterday as we discussed this, and they should come back with a more finalized version. And then as far as the access issue, we'll be having that discussion this summer with our regional partners and with Brighton Estates and see. You know, I am hopeful we'll come up with some solutions. I would love to see us have those done by the end of the year, but it really depends on the level of agreement and cooperation.
So do you foresee the city authorizing access to the Jeep Hill and the road near the old Talisker Yurt?
I really can't speculate at this point. We know they'll have access through the road, and we're just going to have to assess it again and talk to our partners and figure out what makes the most sense for both everybody that lives there and the land and for the management purposes.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the discussion with regard to the budget and looking at capital projects, how we can cut some of those to reduce the amount of the bond. Do we want to see something lower than $55 million? You seem to think that that's palatable.
55?
Mm-hmm.
I actually said I preferred the 50,700,000 option there. We told the public that we would try to get this bond down. And it's been a little bit tricky because a couple of the ways that we thought we could get it down, one of them was density transfers. That could have knocked anywhere from 5 to 8 or 10 million off of it. And the public said, we want you to extinguish that density, which we did. We looked at maybe some carve-outs, selling a few lots, which would have reduced it. And we got a definite no on that. We talked about some housing up there. And for a variety of reasons, that didn't work. So that leaves us with the 64 to work from as our base. We were able to take $9 million from the Resort City sales tax money, which was supposed to go towards open space and downtown improvements, and dedicate that, which just gets us down to 55. And then we looked real hard. Are there some street projects that are not urgent that we could delay? And we were able to find some various projects that we were able to push out in a way that we don't ultimately have to cancel them, but instead of being done in the next 2 or 3 years, will be done in the next 5 to 8 years, mostly streets and storm drains on that front.
When did the council have the discussion with regard to allowing a few development parcels like what we see up there, those really large, big lots?
Yeah, we talked with them. We actually talked initially in the negotiations with them about doing something along those lines with the Sweeneys and their partners. And we talked about it briefly with the public, but it never got any legs.
Well, I don't recall that discussion. That's why I'm asking you,
okay.
Because it seems to me that, you know, if you can sell $3, $2 million lots, that people would be okay with another three big
And I had
up
thought
there.
If we could transfer some of the density to an area in the core of town that could use it, a town would be okay with it. But what I'm hearing overall from our residents is they do not want to increase density.
Hmm. So you're going to get another briefing on this later at the end of the month, and then a decision.
Yeah, we're going to circle back. I think the majority of council preferred the 50 million-dollar bond, essentially. And so I think we're going to take a couple more looks at that. But that's where we're trying to head. And it's, you know, those are deep cuts. I mean, a lot of this stuff, somebody said last night, I think Councilman Henney said, well, these are relatively painless. And they aren't painless for a lot of us. I was part of that council that worked very hard to raise that resort city sales tax money to do these downtown improvements and to purchase open space and such. And these are some big cuts, but we think this is a high priority for the community. We're trying to make it as easy as possible, or as little impact as possible to our residents in terms of the overall cost of the bond. So we're scraping hard, and we'll see if we can come up with additional reductions. But my guess is we're going to end up in that 50 range.
Okay. Coming up, we're going to be talking with one of the developers of the Mayflower property, the Xtel Development Company's Van Haymeyer. One other item I wanted to get to was the Big Stars Bright Nights decision. Council voted 4-1 in favor of it. One of Becca Gerber, who was the only one to vote against it, was concerned that we are spreading the staff too thin. Council doesn't share that concern?
No, we all had that concern. I think hers more had to do with the venues, ultimately why she voted against it. She was worried about the one at City Park and the busyness on the 3rd and the traffic and congestion problems which it will cause, which I think is a very legitimate concern. We heard loud and clear from public safety that we have maxed them out. They cannot take on more events. They cannot take on more hassles. They have figured out how to mitigate this, but really our staffing is spread very thin, in particular with our police. And so we're going to have to look. We're already having the discussions that we have too many events and we need to call those. I think we've now hit our ceiling and we're going to have to take a hard look at that.
Didn't they have to do, though, that work, even if it was at Deer Valley? I mean, what's the difference
in
having a different location?
That was
location?
Part of the challenge here is this isn't an added event. This is something that's been going on for 15 summers. It's a new venue, though, and that new venue adds a degree of complexity and a relatively short time to ramp all this up. So they've been working hard to pull it all together in a short window and make sure it'll function. And ultimately, they warned council. They're like, we're not sure this will go smooth. Things are getting better. Sundance this year in particular, I think the management went really well. I think you'll see some good improvements for summer events. And they said this could be a step backwards because it's so new and so different. We're going to have to adapt as we go. So at the end of the day, council said that there is a compelling community desire to keep the Park City Institute in town and keep these events going. For that reason, we're going forward, but we're asking for the public's patience and cooperation with these events because it'll help a ton if people take their bikes to these events, make sure and take public transit to them, and also have a little patience if it adds some traffic.
Yeah. Sam Rubin offered to have his drivers work for free unlimited trips to bring people to the concerts to save Park City Institute the money to shuttle people. Is that something the council would need to approve? Or
That was new to us, and I'm happy to entertain the offer. Certainly, we're open to creative solutions, and I hope he'll talk to the Institute and our events folks, and it'd be great if they can have a solution to help with this.
Okay. Anything else, Dandy?
I just wanted to tell everybody it is Bike to Work Month, and today we've got actually is Bike to Work Day. We've got our students riding to school, and I encourage everybody to get out on their bikes. It's looking a little gray out of there, so throw a rain jacket in, but have some fun out there.
Okay. Andy Bierman, Park City Mayor, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Well, one of the developers of the Mayflower property, the Xtel Development Company, was before the Wasatch County Council Wednesday presenting their plan for the 2,300 acres they own, located between the Jordan Hill Reservoir and Deer Valley Resort. In the studio with me, I have Van Haymeyer, Vice President of Business Development for Xtel. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so what did the Wasatch County Council have to say?
The Wasatch County Council, I think, was really excited in anticipating this amendment to the existing application that was in place when we purchased the Mayflower property. We really were just presenting an overview of what we had submitted. There were a few questions, but I think generally there's a lot of excitement around this.
Yeah, so it hasn't been approved. It comes back for final approval?
Yes, we are going through the process. The application that was submitted and accepted over 2 years ago, we simply were submitting our amendment to that accepted existing application, and we will move through the process with Wasatch County, working closely with Doug Smith in planning and Mike Davis, county manager, and the council.
Okay. So do we have a name for the project? Because when we talk Mayflower, I mean, there's a lot more to Mayflower than just what you own.
That is a great question. Yes, we acquired the Mayflower property. There's also Blue Ledge, as well as some other acquisitions that are being worked on. And we anticipate coming up with a new name for the entire project. And I would be surprised if we make it out of the year without spending some more time on that and starting a branding campaign.
So Mayflower Deer Valley doesn't work for you?
I do not believe that the Mayflower name will be in it.
Okay. Planner Brooke Hans had said that you're waiting on approvals for the from the state for the voluntary cleanup plan. We've got some tailings?
We do not have any tailings on the site. We simply have the mine waste that really was from having the portal of the Mayflower mine right there where our day skier parking area will be. And we were accepted into the voluntary cleanup plan prior to acquiring the property. And Brooke is working with our team of environmental groups as well as our environmental attorneys on meeting the requirements and moving forward with that voluntary cleanup plan.
So will it require the stuff be hauled off-site, or can you just cap it with a parking lot?
That's exactly what the intent is. We do not anticipate having to take any of the material off-site. It's strategically in places that as we plan the development, it allows us to cap it with the day skier parking lot as well as some of the road corridors that we have. And it meets the requirement for us to do that.
All right. There's also a defensible space discussion with the Wasatch Fire District. What does that require you to do? Fire sprinkle everything?
Actually, the work with Wasatch County, Chief Giles has been great to work with to this point, and we have been working on not only fire breaks, because, you know, one of the most important parts of this property is the beauty that it has. And in the upper mountainous area in the ski terrain, there hasn't really been any fire mitigation effort outside of the grazing on the Mayflower piece. So we have put together a plan with some experts in the industry to cut in some fire breaks that actually will be ski runs eventually, but early in the process through our VCP plan, we have the opportunity to cut those fire breaks in, which we anticipate doing later this year.
Okay, give us an overview of the project. I mean, we're talking, I think, four and five-story hotels?
Yes.
Hotels.
Yeah, actually, we'll have three main hotels in the village area. One of those, which I should mention first, that really is a key component of this project, is the MITA or Air Force Hotel. That one of the needs in the area was, in our view and the experts that we consult with, is a large conference hotel. So we're taking the opportunity to make that Air Force MITA hotel a component of that larger hotel. So we'll have a conference hotel that will be a four-star hotel, have roughly 385 rooms, 100 of those dedicated to the Air Force, and 60,000 square feet of conference space. We believe that this area, with the airlift out of Salt Lake, will be extremely attractive to conferences all over the region. And then the second hotel would be the day skier hotel or skier services hotel. It will kind of be the core of the ski beach, where we will have roughly a 150-room hotel with condominiums, and it will be the base for all of the skier services for the resort as well. And the third hotel, flanking the other end of the ski beach, will be a five-star hotel with condominiums associated with that. We'll have some great private ski clubs that will be a nice amenity for not only owners in the village area, but also for some surrounding properties.
Okay. I didn't realize that MITA had actually made a decision on the location, because they were looking at another site, but they've decided to go here.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We are working hard on completing the transfer in the coming months. that's the plan, is to get that completed in short order and move forward.
So where's the fourth hotel?
Actually, there are plans for an additional boutique hotel that would be five-star or possibly one of these really high-end six-star hotels on either the a little bit up the mountain or possibly over on the Blue Ledge site, which is the original acquisition when Gary came to the area.
That being Gary Barnett.
Yes, Gary Barnett.
Yeah, my understanding is that you're going to work on getting a new zip code for the development. It's that big, huh?
Well, it is. It's that big, but also it's really a benefit to the county. And we were specifically asked by Wasatch County to head up that process. It helps with tax assessment and many other things that will just make it an easier process for the county.
Okay, so we could see work start on the Jordan Hole Parkway, basically to the property there to the intersection of Browns Canyon Road this summer, huh?
Yes.
And
yes.
Then the beginnings of the cleanup or the mitigation happening as well?
Absolutely. We will be starting work on the VCP plan, which will include some of our key road corridors as well as the day skier parking area. And we will also be moving forward on the fire breaks on the mountain.
Yeah, do we have a total number of units?
We do. The application is for 1,908 total units, ERUs, with 1,498 of those coming from residential and 410 associated with the hotel and commercial.
Okay. And given that you could have that many rooms filled potentially, I mean, are there plans for a grocery store or is it going to be in restaurants? I mean, is it required that these people
absolutely
have to get out of there?
Oh, no. We have 250,000 square feet of commercial in the plan. And one of the things that was addressed by Kurt Krieg in our office here was the fact that we fully have in our plans to put a grocery in the area so that the people living and working in the area, as well as all of those residents, have that available to them.
I wanted to ask you, too, we've been talking about Bonanza Flat all day, but your property is contiguous to Bonanza Flat there at the upper reaches.
Yes.
Any plans to develop that, or is that off limits and in dedicated open space at this point?
Actually, all of our focus is on the lower village and the foothills around the village with some residential lots. We have not put any focus, and we do not anticipate at this time moving into that upper area with development. It's absolutely spectacular, pristine ground, has amazing trail systems up there already, and we'll be expanding on those trail systems and linking them to other developments and really making that a wonderful recreation area.
Okay.
Adjacent to Bonanza Flats.
All right. I need to leave it there. Van, thanks for
sure
coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me, Leslie.